The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bears fans are super interested about the offensive coordinator coming in, Shane Waldron. What can you tell them about who they just hired to try to get this offense where it needs to go?
This is live?
Yeah, we're not live.
I'm playing. Good luck to y'all. I mean, he's a great person.
Good luck to y'all.
That quote's making the rounds again.
Oh, my God.
Good question, Mark Carmen. CHGO talking to Jackson Smith and Jigba. Was that at the NFL Combine?
Must have been.
Last February, and gave you a sense of what to expect from Shane Waldron. Didn't quite have the connection there. And now he is no more. Nine games in.
He's still alive.
Bears do something they have never done before in their history. They fire an offensive coordinator in season.
Yeah.
Now, they fired a lot of offensive coordinators. George McCaskey's presided over nine since 2011.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible. It's pretty telling. And Shane Waldron becomes the latest.
And just to let's just go back to the beginning, to the offseason, to the fact that they made a decision, whatever it was, January 2nd or something, to get rid of Luke Getsy. Mm-hmm. So that's January. You fire Luke Getsy, and then you got an opening, and you interviewed nine different people. You interviewed nine guys, including five who are currently coordinators in the NFL.
Yes.
And you know you have the number one overall pick. You know you're kind of leaning toward, you've been already doing research for God knows how long. You know you're taking Caleb Williams.
You are sure of that. You pretty much decided that before you fired Luke Getsy, right?
And you know,
or you think you're going in that direction.
But you know what that means. Mm-hmm. You know that you're going to trade Justin Fields. You know that you're going to, I'm talking about when you start this process. You know that you're going to be bringing in someone to work with the number one overall pick, most likely Caleb. In fact, I think by then they had decided it was Caleb, but I'll be pleasant about it since they hadn't hired the coordinator yet. But they pretty good feel they're going to hire a guy to work with Caleb Williams. And Caleb, by the way, you know, they named him the starter effectively before
they anointed him the starter
before they drafted him.
With our blessing.
Oh, yeah, no,
and
I'm,
everybody
I'm not,
understood that. But
I'm
yes,
not saying,
I just want to be fair here.
But we didn't sit in on the coordinator meetings.
Well,
did we?
No, those are two different things.
Okay,
you can anoint a rookie quarterback who is 1-1 overall without anointing an offensive coordinator that gets the job because of connections, relationships, because you know that you're hiring somebody who isn't going to threaten your job.
See, these are the problems. So you've got all of these things that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for a guy that can bring a young quarterback into the league, that can get the most out of a young quarterback, that can build his confidence and give him a system that will be friendly to him.
Yes.
And that he can adapt to.
Embrace.
But you also need someone that's not going to take the head coach's job. Right?
Hey, because he doesn't have that strong of a personality.
So you want a guy that maybe isn't good in front of the room? Is that it?
Well,
I
think that's a byproduct of what we're talking about.
Okay.
Somebody who's not going to be a head coaching candidate is probably not going to be a head coaching candidate because they're not good in front of the room. So his personality was a perfect fit for what Matt Eberflus might have been looking for.
What you thought,
you were looking for.
And so you get everyone in the building on board. Here's the different people. Here's how we separate them. Here's what we like about him. Shane Waldron, like, he has the same name as the parking deck where people have been parking for years.
Is that going to be demolished now?
I hope so.
I mean, the Waldron deck.
Does he get to take it with him?
Can they rename it? Is it? he can maybe take.
He pulls up with a truck and hooks it up, drives off.
But let's talk about the guys did interview, because you and if you're talking about not hiring, we're talking about not hiring your replacement.
Yes.
Here are the guys who they interviewed who got jobs elsewhere. You tell me if they fit into the category of guys who would be threats to maybe the head coach. Liam Cohen, the Buccaneers, got the fifth highest ranked offense in the NFL right now. Young coach. He has also experience with Sean McVay. He went to Kentucky, reinvented his career or restarted it because he thought that maybe he was going to get fired in that staff or McVay was going to leave, all those things. He's got the fifth-ranked offense with the Buccaneers. He's also been mentioned, I saw, on one short list of guys who could be the next head coach of the Bears.
Okay.
Zach Robinson of the Falcons, 13th-ranked offense right now. Clint Kubiak with the Saints, good family lineage. 16th offense right now. And our guy, who we have followed since, well, he goes way back to the San Francisco days, Greg Roman, who is with Jim Harbaugh in L.A. with the Chargers, who has a 19th ranked offense.
We're missing one. Cliff Kingsbury.
Cliff Kingsbury is the fifth guy I was going to mention because he is the most important miss or omission. But he also fits the category of somebody who would be hired and would be speculated as being the guy who would be a better head coach than the head coach he works for.
Yeah. So in other words, if you got to a crisis point in the season, you wouldn't be firing him. You'd be replacing him with...
he would be the obvious choice
with him
as the interim head coach.
Because he's been a head coach in Arizona.
And the move that they made yesterday might not have been firing the offensive coordinator, would have been promoting him.
Right.
Had they hired Cliff Kingsbury. So,
but he wouldn't have had that offense scoring 9 points for three straight games.
I doubt it. I definitely doubt it. But I have some mixed feelings here because I think that what Shane Waldron did and the way he called plays led to his dismissal, and it was deserved. But I also think that in putting too much blame or culpability on that, it ignores or obscures the fact that this offensive line is not NFL caliber. And I think that one leads to the other, and they're both very tightly connected.
Okay, so let's go back to the offensive line then for a second. Was it never NFL caliber? In other words, is it now, did the injuries create the fact that it's not NFL caliber, or was the decision-making in the way that you went about, I don't want to use the word building the offensive line because I'm not sure they did that, but having Braxton Jones determining, you know, that's good enough. We don't need a left tackle.
All right, well,
I
believe Braxton Jones, expecting him to be as good as some of the best offensive tackles, is he a top 10 tackle? No.
Okay. Darnell Wright, you drafted, you put...
I'm okay with that one.
Him.
You the
Tevin
season,
Jenkins, you drafted him.
It was a prove it season for Tevin Jenkins, and he has proven that he can start games without finishing them.
Okay.
Coleman Shelton was a step backward at center. I think
But that's not fair because I think it would be your offseason move of trading a fifth-round pick for Ryan Bates. He was going to be your starting center. Now, you were in danger of going back to the same problem you had with Cody Whitehair.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, no, I'm just saying you're drafting a guard. You didn't sign.
You're drafting a guard to change him to center with a position he's never played.
Well, and you're that's not the drafting flaw.
I'm sorry, you're trading for him. That's flawed logic.
Well, that's
the spanner in the works. That's the problem with the plan.
That was the first problem.
So I think you.
So the fact that you needed time to develop him into a center, you needed him to be healthy, and you needed him to be ready to go at center is why you signed Shelton as a backup, right?
I know. He was depth.
And he's only become the starter because the guy that you identified as your center was injured.
Should have drafted a center.
Should have drafted a center
instead of drafting a pre-injured guard, tackle from Yale.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but you should have drafted a center. So that's second guessing number one. The other one, then you go to the right side. Nate Davis should not be inactive and finding excuses not to go to the game with a bad back. He should be the guy that you're counting on to be a dependable, reliable veteran presence in the offensive line. Your version of Reuben Brown, the guy who comes to Chicago
and restarts
his career gets paid handsomely to do so.
Yeah. Good call.
He's been a big miss.
That was the fact that you missed on him and then you came back into this year with him again. And I know you had no choice because you had committed – 2 seasons to him.
I suppose.
$10 million a year for 2 years.
You didn't do much to protect yourself,
though.
Third
year, you can buy out. And that, what is it, $2 million to buy out?
Yeah.
Yep. So I guess what I'm saying, though, is that these are the things that you did. You made a trade for a guy that was injured, and then you drafted a guy who is injured and now is injured.
You get what you pay for. And I think the Bears have not invested heavily in that offensive line. And now they're paying the price for that. And Shane Waldron paid the price with his job. Now, he did a lot to contribute to that with illogical play calls in key situations. Not going to
yep. –
this is not the Shane
Jet
Waldron
sweep.
Apologist tour. Yeah,
at the goal line that you lose 10 yards on. The handoff to Doug Kramer.
Both are indelible marks.
And, you know, let's be honest about it. Like, even the idea that he tried to begin the season without a first 15, his thinking was that it'd be easier for the quarterback if he did it differently.
That was the beginning of the end.
And then the players have to go to the coaching and say, hey, we want a first 15. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to prepare like we prepare. So they changed that immediately. But I think we should include that one. Because it is, again, his only job is quarterback development, and he can't even his big idea was a complete bust in terms of trying to help Caleb by reducing the number of plays he has to figure out before the
battle. No doubt. And so it brought us to Monday, and Matt Eberflus still under these circumstances with the offense and the state of disrepair that it is, wanted to keep Shane Waldron on the staff.
Yeah.
Went to work Monday morning, I think, committed to doing that. And it didn't happen because I think that Ryan Poles overruled him. Ryan Poles is the general manager.
Why do you think that happened? What? Explain to me the difference between taking a guy and saying, we'll let Thomas Brown call plays. We'll just put him up in the play. But maybe he sees something upstairs. And then Poles is like, now get him out of my sight. Is that basically what we're concluding?
I think that's what happened. I think Matt Eberflus was willing to keep Shane Waldron on the staff to benefit from whatever expertise he felt he still had to offer. And Ryan Poles did seem to intervene and say, nah, let's make a move. Maybe because of the culture, maybe because of the accountability. Listen, I know you can throw your hands up. You're asking me for plausible explanations.
No, no,
I really don't have one.
I know, but just like how would that help the culture?
Because you are creating a culture, or you're following what you're practicing what you're preaching and trying to establish a culture of accountability. And you're holding Shane Waldron accountable for two of the dumbest calls an offensive coordinator has made in the history of Beardom. And I think that's what ultimately led to his dismissal. is that they couldn't tolerate that, and they wanted to be strong, and the general manager wanted to take a stronger approach than the head coach, so they did.
That handoff to Doug Kramer in that Washington game, that was, I believe I texted you, the dumbest single play call in Bears history.
And yet it is, and we shouldn't be surprised if you talk to people who, from Jackson Smith and Jigba to yesterday, we heard from Emmanuel Acho, who said that he heard from a Pro Bowl Seahawk player. Hint, hint, hint.
Yeah.
The Seahawks only had a couple Pro Bowl players last year. And one of them was Geno Smith, who Emmanuel Acho loves. And this is what he had to say about Shane Waldron.
But I'll share this. I won't share the name. I got a text while we were doing the show from a Pro Bowl player who played for the Seahawks when Shane Waldron was there. This was September 26th. I could have told you when the OC Shane Waldron had hired, the offense was going to be some bleep. Never understood that hire. I respond. They respond. Man, they hated him in Seattle, and we collectively felt like we didn't have a good offensive coaching staff. Close quote. Now, I didn't play for Shane Waldron. I didn't play in Seattle. I sure as heck didn't play in Chicago. But on September 26th on Thursday, after the Bears lost to the Colts and Caleb struggled again, I got a text from somebody who played under that Seattle brand saying, I could have told you the offense was going to be some bleep. The bleep word started with an S. So with that being said, I'm not surprised by the hire at all whatsoever. Something had to give.
By the fire.
I'm not surprised at all by the fire at all whatsoever. Something had to give.
Something had to give. So just for the sake of following through with this, the Seahawks had four players that made the Pro Bowl last year. Quandre Diggs, Jason Myers, Tariq Woolen. Two of those were defensive players. The other's a kicker. And, oh, Geno Smith.
Those kickers are big talkers.
I know, big talkers.
No.
So Geno Smith is the one probably that we can implicate here.
Let's have fun with it. Let's call him up. Let's ask him.
I'd love to.
Why didn't you badmouth the coach? Why didn't you tell the Bears before? How do you hire that? So now we're sitting here, and now we're talking about things. The conversation shifts today because Waldron's out of the building, because we're going to get Thomas Brown and listen to what he has to say. And again, I think while you listen to it, remember, this was never on purpose. In other words, he is an accidental offensive coordinator. I'm not judging on how this will impact him or what he will do, but this is not the scheme that he put together, the playbook that he has known all these years, the players that he claimed, I've got to have this or have that. He's just a guy that's now left with the mess that's been left behind.
Clean it up.
From a fire. And he's got to
clean it up, young man.
And he can't change any of the real plays that they've been running because this is what the quarterback knows.
So,
and his job is now to get something, get anything out of the quarterback. Maybe his job should be to protect the quarterback from himself, from the opponent.
That's priority one.
That's priority one. Of confidence.
Protect Caleb Williams from what's going on around him. The collapsing of the pocket, the collapsing of his confidence, and the derailment of his rookie season. He is in a funk, and whether that's on the field or off of it, if you're Thomas Brown, your number one task is to get him out of that funk, whether it's paying close attention to him off the field and working on his demeanor, his, you know, we're not reading body language. You don't have to. You can see a rookie quarterback experiencing things that a lot of rookies go through, but the Bears are allowing him to be punished physically, and I think by all the sacks that he's taking.
Yeah.
But also I think mentally and emotionally this is difficult, and I just don't know who is Caleb Williams' confidant on this Bears roster, in that locker room.
Good question.
And if you're Thomas Brown, you've got to be that guy. You may not want to be that guy. I know Kerry Joseph is his position coach, and he's got other guys around him. But if you're Thomas Brown, your number one priority is getting to Caleb Williams in a way that Shane Waldron couldn't.
And that is, you know, as much as we sit here and talk about their wretched reality on third down, you're not going to win many games when you can't convert a third down. You're not going to score to open many games when you're looking at the wretched first down percentage that they are incapable of of getting. I mean, for God's sake, David, you can't score on a first quarter drive if you're facing third and 20 or third and 15 or third and 10.
Can always play behind the chains.
Yeah.
You got to stop the pre-snap penalties. All the nonsense needs to quit. It's happening.
This is a real interesting period of time because it is the tipping point. We know that the general manager has overruled the coach. We know the general manager controls whether or not he's going to keep the coach.
Ryan Poles' mess now.
It is now.
He needs to clean it up.
Yep. There's a lot going on. All right. 312-644-6767. Dan Wiederer is going to join us next. We'll run this by Dan, and we'll find out, as bad as things have gotten, is this as bad as it's been? This is pretty bad, man. This is early in the season, 4-5. You got a whole lot of season in front of you, a whole lot of division games in front of you, and things are looking bleak. We'll talk to Dan about it next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hike! Hike!
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials, you got a guy with some qualifications, and now there's just, when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mullion Haugh on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mullion Haugh, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to Dan Wiederer. And like all our guests, he's brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Hey, Dan, how are you, bud? What's going on? Anything new?
Feeling a little bit fatigued, to be honest, but it's going to be a busy day up there at Halas Hall. And, this is something, isn't it?
I got to tell you, it's like, you know, strap on, get into the kind of joy ride, and then it's going to be twists and turns and drops and screams. And this has gone nowhere like you imagined it might. This is the horror version of what might have been a decent year. But goodness gracious, the last three games, now this, now the rumors about the quarterback and the players not liking the court. I mean, holy God, what more can happen now? We're just over halfway through the year.
Right, right. And it's been so rapid, Molly. I mean, you're standing on the football field with 25 seconds left in Washington with a lead and the chance to improve to 5-2. That's a different world. And now here we are, what is it, less than 3 weeks later, and it's, you know, a 4-5 football team that just fired its offensive coordinator, is going nowhere fast. And now all of us are trying to figure out whether they can get to 6 wins, much less 9 or 10, and play themselves into meaningful football games in the month of December and January. Man, like the cleanup process right now is as daunting as any in-season cleanup process that I can recall. This is my 12th season on the beat. I've lived through some stuff, and it's just hard to imagine that they have it within them, given the schedule ahead of them, to make meaningful progress down the last 2 months of the season. And that's a scary place to be.
Well, you just, as you tweeted out this morning about the Tribune archives 53 weeks ago, quote, "It's time to support all the hopeful rhetoric with on-field evidence of momentum and success. The degree of difficulty remains elevated as they attempt to steady themselves after yet another chaotic week." And then you reference a staff departure. Last year was David Walker. This year, Shane Waldron. You referenced Jaquan Brisker dealing with a concussion issue. Oh, wait, that's happening again. You talked about an unsettled offensive line. That's a bear tradition, unlike any other. And the playoff hopes being dashed before they really get legitimate. Dan, you have been here before. I guess that's the good news. You're experienced in asking the right questions today. But how did the Bears get out of this one in the way that maybe they spun out of last year?
I'll get to your question in a minute. But I took a call yesterday from someone that asked me how I was doing, someone in the league. And I said, look, like, this is muscle memory for me at this point. This is six consecutive years that we've had some level of holy S, right? Like, in our world, you know, 2019, Rich Campbell and I are writing this long deep dive on how the Bears botched the quarterback draft in 2017, 2020. You've got, you know, the team that falls apart late in the year, goes into a playoff game, gets blown out. And then you've got the infamous, you know, George McCaskey, Ted Phillips, everything's there, but the quarterback in the wins press conference, you know, 21, 22, you know, you go right down the list, 22, you've got a 10 game losing streak, 21, you've got patch.com. Last year, you've got a 2-7 start with two assistant coaches either fired or resigning inside the building because of contact. It's muscle memory that I wish I didn't have, to be honest with you. And so now to get to your question on how they get this turned around, the biggest thing that matters over these last 8 weeks is trying to steady your franchise quarterback. Like, you cannot suddenly lose faith in the pick that you made in making this kid your future and the engine of everything you want to do in the future. And so you have to find every single person in that building that can steady Caleb Williams and get him playing productive growth football down the last eight games of the season, whatever that has to look like. Good luck, Thomas Brown. Here's your roll of paper towels. Go clean up the mess.
I honest to God, I feel like I've spent the last 40 years of my life looking at injury lists on a weekly basis and, you know, kind of shaking my head. I look at where they're at. This already, I would say twice this year, I've looked at the injury list and thought, well, they're not going to win this game. I don't know that that's every season, but this is really kind of a train wreck. What would good news look like? Let's put it that way.
Let's talk about the injury report for a minute, because it shines a spotlight on some of the miscalculations that Ryan Poles made coming into the season. You guys all heard in September how confident he was in the talent and depth of his offensive line. Well, you went to the starting gates of the regular season with two starting guards that you knew. Everyone in the National Football League knew were unreliable. Tevin Jenkins leaves almost every other game with an injury. It's now five of the last six games that he's left with an injury. He's missed more games than he's played 100% of the snaps in. You know the track record there. Nate Davis is known as a poor teammate by everyone that's been around him. He healthy scratches himself with a back issue. I don't know. I guess it's not a healthy scratch, but you know what I mean. On the morning of a game after he practiced all week, he's suddenly unavailable to you on a week where you need depth on your offensive line. Karan Amagaji comes in pre-injured. Ryan Bates comes in pre-injured. And then you're wondering why midway through the season you can't put together a functional offensive line. This is a problem for the previous question that we talked about getting Caleb Williams comfortable. It's hard to get comfortable when you're patching together an offensive line with chicken wire and bubblegum. That's where they were last week. It got ugly quickly, and they didn't score a touchdown against one of the league's worst defenses. Again, Thomas Brown, good luck. You've got the roll of paper towels. Figure out a way with Chris Morgan, your offensive line coach. Figure out a way with Caleb Williams, your quarterback. Figure out a way with all the offensive captains that are going to come to talk to you to put together a realistic game plan to have success, understanding that you have a defense that's going to keep you in football games. It's the only way to kind of get through this storm in a way where it all doesn't fall apart.
So I wonder where this is headed, Dan, as you are talking and we're reminiscing and all the dysfunction that you've experienced, we've covered. Because I think, yes, now it's the offensive coordinator and what they do there with calling plays. Eventually it'll be Matt Eberflus, because in year three he's going to end up losing more games than he won last year and heads headed in the wrong direction. By the end of the season, the way this is trending, I do wonder legitimately and fairly if we're going to be wondering about the future of Ryan Poles because of the jeopardy he put the Bears in with this lack of offensive line emphasis. And also, let's not ignore the elephant in the room. He passed on Jim Harbaugh, who was available to interview. They did not even speak to him, and he doubled down on his guy, Matt Eberflus. At some point in time, as this continues to devolve, that's got to be a question that his bosses ask, what were you thinking?
Right, and I don't know all the ins and outs of Jim Harbaugh's interest in coming here and what all the kind of complicated logistics would have been to try to make something like that happen. What I do know is that when we finished last regular season, there was first guessing on whether Matt Eberflus should retain his role as the head coach of this football team for several reasons. Number one, you were turning over the development of an elite quarterback talent over to a defensive-minded coach who had no track record of developing quarterbacks. That's a little bit of a leap of faith and a major risk. In so doing, you are also setting that rookie quarterback up to be involved with win-or-else pressure for a head coach that he shouldn't have to be feeling during his rookie season. Like, we just watched Drake May come to town last week with a football team that's not expecting to go anywhere this year. And so when he makes mistakes and when he experiences failures, there's just some shrugging, and he gets some forgiveness and he gets some patience and he gets to move on to the next week, as he did the previous week when they lost an overtime game in Tennessee. And it was like, no big deal. You know, you made some plays down the stretch. You got us into overtime. Let's just turn the page. It's a whole different environment for Caleb here, living through all of these storms where every mistake is magnified, where every loss becomes a crisis in the city of Chicago. And then you've got
hold on a second, Dan. We're having a little problem with
the,
are you there?
You got me?
There
got
we go. We're back. Go ahead. We're communicating.
You just cut out. It was very upsetting.
Apologies for that. I must have gotten some of Matt's self-service here at the home front. Not sure what happened. But like I say, look, like there was a lot of reasons to have first guesses on whether Matt Eberflus should be back as coach. Now we're midway through his third season. He has done nothing to tell you that he can be a championship level head coach in the NFL. And so that decision is clear. And now, David, your question about Ryan, I think it just matters how this looks down the last 8 weeks of the season. Are guys still bought in? Are they competing? Are you playing a brand of football that you can be proud of? If it goes south the way it has the last couple of weeks and that continues, City.
Yeah, I think and I get it. You know, we're moving on. It's now time to see what the next guy can do with the same plays, with the same problems. Maybe you run the ball. Maybe you figure out a way to protect the quarterback a little bit. But before we get off the subject, I just want to go back to the idea that they all met. They talked to nine guys. They went through everybody. They had one job, which was to get the quarterback up and running and protected and all the rest of it. And that is an abject failure for the entire franchise.
Let's hire the safe guy.
Oh, my God. They hired a guy in part because he shared an agent with the other two guys and he wasn't going to threaten the coach's job. I mean, give me a minute here.
The biggest problem with it, Mully, is that presence matters in a locker room. It matters in an offensive meeting room. And you knew from the first time Shane Waldron walked onto the podium at House Hall that presence was going to be a problem for him. We were giving him some chances to show that his offensive strategy and his ability to put together a system and develop a quarterback would be tested this year. But you had players in the first month of the season commenting privately about how nervy Shane Waldron is, you know, and just how you know, uninspiring it is to listen to him in front of the room try to communicate what he wants. That obviously played itself out over 2.5 months of the regular season here to the point where he lost his job. And you had one goal, you know, last offseason when you're drafting a quarterback at number one overall, it's to make sure that you set him up for optimal success. The fact that they not only failed, but failed this quickly, it's an embarrassment of portions that are hard to fathom, even as three people here that have covered this football team for a long time. Like you think it can't get worse. And then they say, okay, hold my beer, you know, and here we are with the second half of the season still ahead and the Bears needing to troubleshoot things so that they don't break the number one overall pick in the draft before he finishes his rookie season. It's impossible to fathom right now. It really is.
Dan, what do you make of the reports that players approach Matt Eberflus about Caleb Williams, whether or not they should be replacing him, whether or not they were getting along with him, or whether or not he was working hard enough off the field, away from Hallis Hall, to do his job the right way. Do you plan to ask Matt Eberflus and or Caleb about those reports today?
I don't know what to make of them. I think there's a lot of digging that needs to be done. None of my reporting has been able to, corroborate that and figure that out. If that did occur, I would be curious to know the tone and the context of those conversations. Is it, hey, coach, I think that Caleb might benefit from just clearing his head for a couple weeks, or is it the exact opposite where it's, man, I don't know, like personality wise, this just isn't clicking and this is becoming pretty divisive inside this locker room. There's a wide scale of, area between those two poles on what might be occurring there. What I think Caleb has to do today is project a level of steadiness and confidence. What I think the Bears have to do internally is figure out what is the disconnect. Why are things not clicked? We've talked for a couple months now about the inability for Caleb and DJ to get unlocked in a way that's meaningful for the offense. You got to solve those issues. And there's about 25 issues that need to be solved here in a short period of time. Oh, by the way, playing a big stage game Sunday afternoon against the Green Bay Packers with Fox bringing its premier broadcast crew to town. Tom Brady probably not going to hold back on the broadcast and let the world know what he's watching with his championship vision eyes. And I don't know, man, like you've got to figure out a way to get Caleb back in a healthy space. And if guys aren't on board with that, then they've got to be pressed on why they're not on board with that, because Caleb is the future. I mean, yep. you don't do what Carolina did and just pull the escape button, so quickly in a career. You've invested at least three seasons in seeing this through with Caleb Williams. You're nine games into his career. So somebody's got to understand what the mission here is for the franchise. And you've got to make sure that everybody is pulling in the same direction.
Great stuff, Dan. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Dan. Hang in there.
All right, guys. Enjoy another happy week.
That's Dan Weaver. You're listening to Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Matt, is this decision yours and yours alone, or does it come in consultation?
It's my decision, mine alone. Yes, sir.
Maybe not. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Tom Bellisario reporting NFL Network that Flusie would have preferred to keep Shane Waldron around.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted to strip him of play calling and then maybe have him go up into the skybox and enjoy a game with a different perspective. Maybe change his thinking a little, but the general manager, Ryan Poles, said none of that.
That is consistent with the information I got yesterday talking to a couple people who were familiar with how things went down Monday at Hallis Hall. And you know how it works when there are coaches who used to work here or coaches who talk to coaches who used to work here. There's a theory that's offered and information that's shared. And apparently Matt Eberflus came to work Monday committed to keeping Shane Waldron on the staff. And Ryan Poles,
I hope he's asked about that today.
I hope he is too. And I don't think there's any scenario I could imagine where he isn't. Why wouldn't you? That to me, when you're talking about the future now.
Yeah.
The last time we heard from Matt Eberflus was on a Monday, and he vaguely described the process. How many times did he use the word process? The process at that point was already underway, and Shane Waldron was informed Monday morning that this was the direction they were going to go. And they extended him a professional courtesy of maybe not announcing it on Monday. I'm not sure why.
If you're paying the guy $5 million to leave, why not keep him around and pick his brain? I'm just wondering, why do you think there was a feeling from the general manager that, no, it's better to get rid of him?
Again, this is probably his vantage point, not mine.
Yes.
If you're trying to create a culture that is steeped in accountability, then you're going to try to hold people accountable for things and decisions they make that don't go well. And Shane Waldron, through nine games, did not do his job well. In the last three games specifically, the offense plummeted, and it's broken. And you have gone now back-to-back games without scoring a touchdown, all the numbers, 23 possessions. And those are the statistics that support the decision. There's also the glaring examples that we have talked about and we'll never forget or unsee. The handoff to Doug Kramer.
Yeah.
And the speed option against the Colts.
Well, I know why the guy shouldn't be the play
caller. Right. But why did Ryan Poles justify it, or why did he not want him around?
Why out of the building?
Decisiveness, strong leadership.
We no longer want to do your laundry, sir. Could be as simple as that.
I think possibly. I wonder, too. Again, the Bears have never done this before.
Never fired a coordinator in season.
Yeah. Is this
lost one last year in season?
Is this also, again, this is pure speculation. What we just described is not. It's backed up with sourcing. But I think that you wonder if Kevin Warren got involved and said, we need to have a show of strength here. We need to look like we know what we're doing. I don't know, but it would not be something. I love your expression.
I just love the idea that, you know, hey, we listen, we're clearly lost and we can't find the roadmap, but we need to look like we know what we're doing.
They don't look like they know what they're doing.
Listen, they're literally a laughing stock around the National Football League.
Yeah.
When you stop and look at it, and we've talked a little bit about Georgia's tenure, the 11 years without a playoff win. You don't think people know that around the league? You don't think people comment? As a reporter, as you well know, from years of talking to people around the NFL, you will talk to guys on other teams, and they will snicker. They will kind of have
had that happen to me this week. I mean, talking to somebody, yes, who used to work here. They're snickering at the Bears.
Of course.
They are a national laughingstock. It's
no
so redundant. And I would advise people, go to Twitter, we were talking to Dan Weider. His tweet from the Tribune Archives 53 weeks ago today describes the state of affairs at Hallis Hall, that this is history repeating itself.
Yeah, the more things change, the more they really stay the same.
And I just want to go back to what we talked about coming in. Yeah, Kevin Warren's new in town. Yeah, Ryan Poles is the GM. Yeah, Matt Eberflus is the head coach. George McCaskey took over as the chairman in 2011. And since that point, George McCaskey has had 9 different offensive coordinators and four different general managers and 5 different head coaches.
That's a lot of GMs to fill.
Yes. This is the more things change, the more they stay the same. 4 GMs, 5 head coaches, 9 offensive coordinators.
It's a Christmas song. All right. We've got a lot to get to. We're going to talk to, we're going to talk to everybody. We'll get to some of your phone calls. We have full phone lines. I always feel bad when we don't get to the callers. I just feel guilty about it. Maybe it's me. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.